Wait a minute. The Lord understood that we're going to learn about Daniel. See, I'm not the only one. I mean, you get COVID and you're crazy for a while. Turn, please, to the book of Daniel. It's okay. We're going to do Daniel a little differently, not too much. We're going to assume that most of you know the stories. We will hit the stories, but we're not going to dwell on them too long and too much, except to get their significance, because what we want to get out of it is God's power, who God is. And one of the reasons for doing that is, as we later get on into a later part of Daniel and we start seeing a lot of language that is strange to us and the interpretation of dreams, we're going to recognize that when you get to the book of Revelation, you see that same thing. And the indication is that Daniel, as he looks forward and he goes to the kings and the kingdoms that are going to come, is dealing with the same thing the book of Revelation is. Although the book of Revelation picks it up and tells what is going to happen in the days of those saints and those who come after them, so that they know what is going to come to pass and what they're going to endure. So we will emphasize that, especially later as we get into the book further. But in the first part, we're just going to try to concentrate on not just the events, not just the story, but the significance of them and what they have to do with the power of God. On the chart, we look first of all at the background to the captivity, and that's how Daniel ended up in Babylon, because Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem and took him and some others away, and we'll look at a few details about that. Josiah was the last good king that Israel had. And Josiah had a son, Jehoahaz, who reigned only 3 months, and the Egyptians came and captured him, killed him. And his brother then, Jehoiakim, became king. And Nebuchadnezzar comes against him in 605. And he takes the artisans, the talented people, and we'll get a description of those, and those of the seed royal. What would you understand from the seed royal? Daniel would have been of what family? The royal family. So Daniel is not just some smart young man. He is highly favored. He is already well trained. He is the kind of person that a king would like to bring into his kingdom, groom and train, and become one of his advisors and use his talents. And to belong to a class of people or associate with the class of people called Chaldeans. Now, first of all, that's a general name. But we're going to find magicians, we're going to find sorcerers, we're going to find associated with them this great group of thinkers known as Chaldeans. And Daniel is being groomed to take his place to stand before the king. And to stand before the king doesn't mean to be a court jester, but it means to stand there as an advisor, in essence to be a member of the king's cabinet. Just as our president has his cabinet, that's what Daniel is being groomed to become. And then when Nebuchadnezzar comes against Jerusalem and captures it, he takes him away. Jehoiakim's not working out, so he comes back and he lays siege to the city. He captures Jehoiakim. Different ideas about what happened to him. Was he taken to Egypt? Did he die? Did he die in place there? Was he taken? I'm not sure exactly what happened to him, but we don't read any more of him. But then his brother, Jehoiakim, also known as Jeconiah or just Kaniah, that there's a curse in the book of Jeremiah made against Kaniah that no one of his seed would ever reign in Jerusalem and prosper. What significance just does that promise we have? Just to mention it here as we go through, as we're looking forward at Daniel's ability by the providence of God and his help, giving him visions of what is going to come. And when Jeremiah has the same thing, and he says, "Oh, Kaniah," and mentions his name 3 times, "no one of your seed will sit in Jerusalem and prosper forever again." What significance does that have? What Can you think of any religious idea that that just destroys completely? Jesus Christ comes from the lineage of Coniah, Jeconiah. That's this brother of, or the son of, Jehoiakim. This is Jehoiakim, Jeconiah, or Coniah. And so what would that say about Christ? If no one of his seed shall ever sit and rule in Jerusalem and prosper, then what does that say about the rule of Jesus Christ? Where is it not going to be? Yeah, and specifically, where is it not going to be? In Jerusalem. Where are millions of people today who claim to be Christians? Where do they believe that Jesus, what do they believe that Jesus is going to do if he came today and had the rapture and not kept us 7 years and comes back? He's coming back to where? And what's he going to do there? What was said of Coniah and his descendants? No one of his descendants would ever sit in Jerusalem and prosper in Jerusalem. So Jesus is not going to physically reign from Jerusalem. He has the new Jerusalem of which we are a part. He is our king, and his throne is in heaven with God's, and that's where he reigns, and he will reign until he comes at the end, and then he will gather the elect, and he will take them home to glorify God. Jehoiakim lasted 3 months, and Nebuchadnezzar comes again, treats him kindly, takes him to Babylon, and actually he's going to thrive and prosper there in Babylon. But there is put on the throne then Zedekiah, who is the son, the third son of Josiah. Josiah, Jehoiakim, Jehoiakim, Jehoiakim's brother, and now Zedekiah. Zedekiah rebels, and Nebuchadnezzar has it. So Nebuchadnezzar comes, destroys the city, and when he destroys the city, what else does he destroy? The temple. What does he do? Does anybody know what he does with Zedekiah? Yeah, okay, but before he does that, what is the last thing that Zedekiah sees? His sons being killed by Nebuchadnezzar. And then his eyes are put out, chained to his nose, and he is carried off to Babylon. So this is the background of the book of Daniel. Daniel is there in the days of Jehoiakim, this son of Josiah, who is not a good king, and the one who is there when Nebuchadnezzar first comes. And he takes these talented people. Well, let's look at how they're described over in verse 3, Daniel 1. Somebody read to me verse 3, please. And 4, verses 3 and 4.
Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the...
Okay, some of the king's descendants, you says, okay, mine says seed royal, but that's the idea. King's descendants, go ahead.
Young men in whom there was no blemish, but good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans.
Okay. It talks about this man, Ashpenaz. He is the, before I ask that, when you have this description of Daniel and these others that he selects, there is in them no blemish, well-favored and skillful. This is a kind of far-reaching question that has a specific answer, and I'm not sure I'm going to get asked, so you will know what I'm asking. Tell me something that one of these people who was, in whom was no blemish, what he would not be. You see them in kingdoms, you see them in harems, you see them as a what?
A eunuch.
Would not be a eunuch. And Ashpenaz is what? He's the chief of the master of the eunuchs. Daniel is going to be put in his charge. The likelihood, probably more than likelihood, is then that Daniel became a eunuch. And kings did this to people. They wanted to bring in and empower and give them influence. They would make eunuchs of them because what else are they going to do? Where else are they going to go in life? That's their job, and they will finish it up. And of course, Daniel did. Happily, Daniel was faithful to his God through all of this, but evidently became a eunuch among these others who would have become eunuchs and been trained to be a part of the council of the king of Babylon, this time Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, we've got that. Let's go to a little map that is, did I put the thing over there? Yeah. It's probably right behind me.
It may be up on that.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I ever had it. Thank you. Jeff has joined a whole chorus of people that say, why don't you just forget PowerPoint? Okay, so we'll try this. Okay, can you see the map? See the red line? And as you look over to, as I'm looking at it, the bottom left, that's Jerusalem, the bottom of that. If you're going to Babylon, you see Babylonia way over here. Why in the world does it go like that? The river? The water? The desert. Yeah. There's only one occasion we find where that was crossing. It's when Nebuchadnezzar was over there in Jerusalem and his father died. And he took an unusual route and made it across there. You normally did not do that. You were going to be without water. You were going to be without food. You were going to be in a desolate kind of climate. And so actually when Abraham started from Ur over there, we're near where you see Babylonia, that's the way he went up in a little further north into Haran, up into southeast Turkey, and settled there and was well placed there when God said, go to a land that I will show to you and I will give it to your descendants. And that's roughly the route then that Abraham would have traveled. Now, the children of Israel, or Judah particularly, are traversing that in reverse. So, where we all start over there in Genesis, the 11th and 12th chapter, and end up over in Jerusalem, now that's just completely reversed, and the people of God are being carried back over there. I say the people of God, not all of them are there. A few left, and then there are bad things that are going to happen to them. I didn't mention who then followed Zedekiah. Zedekiah was the last king, but there'll be a few people in the land left there just to keep the land from going to rot. And in order to sustain the land, there was a governor appointed, and who knows the name of that governor? Gedaliah was the governor. The people rebelled against him, and having done that, they decided to flee for Egypt because of the fear of Babylon. And they took Jeremiah with them, and Jeremiah then evidently died there, going there and being taken there against his own will because he had prophesied against their going there and warning them not to go there, but they went there and they perished. But that's where they were in the history that we've got here. That's the course that they would have taken as captives to get to Babylon. And when they're going to come back, the 70 years later, we'll look at that, that's going to be quite a study. They're going to traverse pretty much that same terrain coming back. Any questions in our comments before we go into our questions, or at least my questions that I've got written down here, you don't have them. And I'm not going to give you questions. This next week I want you to study the latter part of chapter 2 and chapter 3. Read that and have it well in mind, because that's what we're going to be doing this time. So while these men are being trained, Daniel has a problem. And there's an expression I like in verse 8. Look at the first chapter of Daniel, verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's dainties. And it mentions the king's dainties and the wine and the luxury that was set for him. And today with the Epicurean appetites that all of us have, just how to be set up like that. I mean, you're going to eat from the king's dainties, the precious things that are brought to the king. You're going to eat of that day after day after day. You're going to drink his wine. I mean, you don't have to worry about food, man. You can get up and start your day. You can have steaks for lunch. You can have whatever you want, pizza for supper. What? Well, it wouldn't have been that. But there would have been some things unclean. And Daniel, rather than saying, you know, I'll just take up what's all right, he just said, I'll get you any of it. And it said, Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. I saw a commercial recently, and it was this person. I shouldn't do this, but I am. Yeah. He was saying, I like being not too heavy. I like being this. I like being handsome or whatever it is. But I like ice cream more. So I didn't see the rest of the commercial, but I'm assuming if he's a thoroughly modern man, then what does he do and what does he indulge in? Ice cream, because that's what it, why would he indulge in ice cream? Because he, yeah. Okay, people, You know, when you get old, you've lived all your life hearing people talk about the good old days. Well, there were some bad things back. But things, you know it. And I mean, I've had people who've been in high school 4 years later, they tell me how much changed in 4 years. They're complaining about what's going on in high school after just being out 4 years. There was a time in the American character, not everybody did, but when they liked this more, but this was better for them, and this was preferable, and this was noble. They liked this more, but what did they chose? This. That's not the way we principally make our choices today. We just do like the guy who liked the ice cream, and we're going to take the ice cream. Our whole culture is so defiled. We've lost our principles. The things that are noble, the things that are good, the things that are beautiful, the treatment of love of your fellow man, trying to respect people who deserve respect. You don't see that. And you hear the vilest, foulest language. And that's admired. And having power and being able to beat up another person and beat him to a pulp, that's all that gives us power. That's what I'm saying is Daniel wasn't like that. I read a statement, I don't remember who said it, but it put it like this. Daniel began as he meant to go on. I want you to think about that. I want you to tell me back in your own words what that says. Daniel began as he meant to go on. Somebody talk to me about that or make an application of it. When he got there, did he wrestle with what he was going to do? No, he didn't wrestle with it. His mind was made up. I'm going to do this. I don't care what else. I mean, I've been chosen by the king to be a part of his cabinet. Here are the requirements. I am not going to do that. It will defile my conscience. It will put something else before my God. And I am not going to do that. Some applications of that are when I was in first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade, during World War II, we moved a lot. I went to several different schools, and I didn't know then what I would learn later, and that is, how do you start off at a new, you've got a new job, or a new position, or a new something, how do you start off? As you mean to, Daniel began as he meant to, go on. He didn't start and say, well, I'll ease in here. I'll see how these people react. I'll see how to get along with them. Daniel's whole decision was, I know who I am. I know what is right. That is what I'm going to do. I'm going to start from the beginning, and that is what I'm going to be. And that's a lesson for us wherever we find ourselves in life, to begin the way we mean to go on or end up. Because if you don't begin that way, what's the difficulty in ending up the way you want to?
Well, you have a goal if you think that way, right?
Yes, you've got a goal, but you can have the goal and yet you're kind of fiddling around over here. Does that make the goal easier to reach or harder?
Harder.
It's harder because you're going to have to get rid of some things. You're going to have to change some people's minds and say, yeah, I know I acted like that and I know I said that, but that's not really me. Joe? Yes.
Evidently, Daniel had a very good upbringing to that point and understood. And the thing is, when, not just now, even when I was a kid, a lot of people just said, well, what we're going to do is try to do, you know, get by, in other words. You know,
yes. I'll just keep my head down and get by the best I can.
Right.
He wanted to be godly. That's it. That was his principal point in life.
I think it shows his courage, too. I mean, that takes a lot of
Yeah. Even this pause right there. Even the king. You're not going to compromise with him. I don't care what the king wants. I know who I am. This is what I'm going to do. Go ahead. Okay, but that was a good line.
Basically, you know, just have the courage to...
Yeah, so it takes courage to be a Christian is what we're saying.
He's also in a new country, a foreign country, and yet he's not... And he could have been afraid, but he wasn't afraid of that.
Yes.
Okay,
so add that, his faith, courage, Joe.
Well, one thing that I took note of, I don't know how many there were that were chosen for this, but basically it seems like there were four.
Yes.
Daniel, you know, Ananias, Azariah, Mishael, that really knew God and went into and trusted God. I don't know whether the others... They evidently were intelligent and smart and all that kind of stuff. But here's these four out of, I don't know, what would you say, maybe 80, 90, 70, whatever the number you might think, there's got to be a good number of that they're going to try to train because a lot are going to flush out. So, you know, it's really something remarkable to me that these guys knew where they were going.
Yeah, and I'm impressed that Joe said, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. You know them better by what? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes, that's who that is. So they're in there with Daniel. They stand with Daniel, and God blesses them. Also, they're going to get in trouble with the king because even after the king sees, this is amazing to me, when he sees the power of God, and he sees Daniel, by the power of God, do something all of these wise men can't do, even when they are threatened with death. He then still is going to erect another god out here. And that's eventually where we're going to get to. Probably not, a little bit of that. Of who is God? And why do people believe in these other gods? So he's seen the power of the one God, and yet out on the plains of Dura, he's going to build this great monstrosity of an idol, and he's going to insist that everybody worship it. But there are three who don't, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Well, we'll get to that story anyhow. So we spent really, I got off to the side, but the point I think is still important to make, and some of these things we need to glean, even though that may not be the particular focus of our aim in the book of Daniel. So there's this declaration, and they do not eat of the food. The prince of the eunuchs, who is over them, is afraid for his own life, but he trusts them, and it ends up they are blessed, and they are thriving in their appearance. And so, as it comes out, they continue then to eat. Well, what are the different words you have that it says? Daniel said, give me what to eat. Vegetables, that's really the idea. Pulse, herbs is the idea. So that's what they have thrived on. Let me see, then we come down. And they're brought before the king after not just the 10 days, but eventually the time of testing is over. Does anybody remember how that was back in the beginning? How long it was? How many years? 3 years. Okay, so 3 years are going to be up. And then there are several things that begin to happen. And that brings us, I think, to the second chapter. And what occurs in the second chapter that becomes quite a problem? The king, something about the king. What?
He has a dream.
Does he tell anybody what the dream is? Yeah, why? Okay, you said because he wanted them to tell him. But why wouldn't he tell them the dream? Not just because by their telling him that would prove they could answer it because they knew, but why wouldn't he tell them the dream? He couldn't remember it. When I was a kid, my mother said, don't ever tell your dream before breakfast because it'll come true. So if it's a bad dream, don't tell it. That's one of these things parents tell kids, but there's actually a purpose in that. Do you enjoy hearing about other people's dreams, especially when they're really weird? Okay, no. But if you wait till after breakfast, what is the likelihood? You don't remember the dream. You can remember whether it's good or bad, whether it bothered you, whether it disturbed you or something, but you don't remember all the details of the dream. That's Nebuchadnezzar's problem. He said this dream is disturbed and terribly, but he can't remember what it is. So he calls them in and he says, okay, tell me. And they say what? He said, tell me the interpretation. And they say what? Yeah, what was the dream? Well, I mean, I don't know. But I'll tell you what. You tell me, or if you don't, I'm going to have you killed. And so the time went by, and they couldn't tell him what it was. He's going to have him killed. And the order goes out. They're going to kill you. And Daniel hears of it, and he says, stop, don't do that. I can go to my God. I cannot interpret. Only God can do that. But I will find out, and I will convey the dream. And he did. He knew what the dream was, and he's going to tell it to Nebuchadnezzar. Let me see if that's... Come down to the 14th verse. Daniel, the second chapter, verse 14. In fact, let's start with verse 13. So the decree went forth, and the wise men were to be slain. And they sought Daniel and his companions to be slain. All of them. All these people who had been in training, who completed the training, all these people who had been his counselors before, they won't tell him the dream, so he knows they do not have the power to tell what the dream means. So what good are they? He'll just kill them. If he needs some wise men, he will get them. And that's the trouble with people in power. If they feel like they want to take your life, they can. So then the 14th verse. Then Daniel returned answer with the counsel of the prudence to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who's gone forth. So to get the message to the king. And we come down to verse, 20. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings and gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to them that have understanding. He reveals the deep and secret things. He knows what is in the darkness and in the light dwelleth, and the light dwelleth with him. When it talks about his changing times and seasons, not just talking about nature, though I believe nature is involved with this. Listen, I'm not being political here. Do I believe climate's changing somewhat? Yeah, a little bit. Do I believe there's much man can do about it? Who's going to determine what the climate is going to be 20 years from now? Have there been hotter periods of weather than we are having now? Yes. Have there been colder periods than the coldest periods we've had? Yes. There have been ice ages. And Greenland was once what? Yes, ice now. It was once green. So climate changes. Okay, do what we can. I don't like polluting water. I don't like dirty air any more than anybody else. But first of all, my trust is in God. He's in charge. But when it says he changes the seasons, it's not just the earthly seasons. His next remark, after talking about changing the seasons, says he does what in verse 21? He removes kings. What does that have to do with anything we're studying about here? So Daniel says, yes, I can interpret this. I'll tell you what the God who changes seasons says and who removes kings. Because the dream has to do with what? Different empires, different kings. The rise and the fall of kings. And who is in charge of that happening? God is. Who brought it to pass? God was. Who fulfilled everything that was fulfilled in those different empires that God said would happen? God fulfilled all of that. And that's the big point now we're going to get to and we're aiming at. And especially when we finish this and Jeff goes into the book of Revelation, is to see who... Not just go what God can do, but to see who God is. Before I get to that question, about the idea that people have in God. Young people today don't have a solid, concrete concept of God. Or there's a God, there's something... I kind of probably need to please him if I know what to do. But they really don't know who God is. And Nebuchadnezzar is going to learn who God is. It's going to take him a while. He's going to have some trouble before he gets it all straightened out. But he will learn who God is. And some of the greatest praise of God is written in the book of Daniel by King Nebuchadnezzar. And we'll get to that. And it's profound. It's just thrilling to read what this king says. But for instance, in the time of Ben-Hadad and Ahab, Ben-Hadad says to Ahab, he's kind of tired of Ahab down there smarting off. So he says, listen, your house is mine, your wives are mine, your children are mine, your silver and your gold are mine. And so Ahab says, you know, I don't want to go to war, so okay, they're yours. And that didn't settle the matter, though. So Ahab, or Ben-Hadad, says, oh, okay, so then what did Ben-Hadad demand? What did Ahab just say? Okay, they're yours. His wives, his children, silver, his gold. And so Ben-Hadad says, oh, okay, if they're mine, then do what? Send it to me. Send them to me. Oh, Ahab's upset now, so he calls his counselor and says, hey, look, he made this threat. And I says, okay, we're yours. We'll serve you. But now he wants my children, he wants my wives, he wants my silver, and he wants my gold. So they decide they will fight. And so they're going to get together war, and Ben-Hadad is so confident he's out there getting drunk in the pavilion. He sends his armies out, and they get defeated. Well, that didn't turn out too well. So they got together, and they discussed it, and they said, God must be the God of the hills, and we fought them in the hills. Next year, we'll fight them in the valleys. And so next year, they fought them in the valleys, and what happened? Yeah, Ben-Hadad lost again. I think 100,000 men he had destroyed. But people think of God like, there's a God of the sea, there's a God of this, there's a God of that, there's a God of trees, there's a God of just kind of whatever. In Daniel, we're going to see who God is. And unless we know that, there's just a lot of things we're not going to know, we're not going to answer. So that really brings us then to this, and I want to ask the question. The impasse, we've got the wise men. Yes, here's their statement. There's not a man upon the earth that can show the king's matter, for as much as no king or any ruler has asked such a thing of any magician, enchanter, or Chaldean, and there is no other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. So they're saying, if they're human beings, they can't tell you. Only the gods that don't have flesh. So they didn't have a clear concept, but they could tell that thing out on the plains of Dura, that wasn't God, even though Nebuchadnezzar may have built it. But so they have some kind of concept. But more and more, that's the kind of thing that we're running into in our culture today. God's not flesh, I guess. No, it's not flesh, but what is he? And people don't know who God is. They don't know what God is. And they've grown up hearing about Jupiter and Zeus and Poseidon and Mercury and the other Roman Greek gods out of literature. And so they kind of, people today are dumb. Seriously. We have forgotten how to think. And we just become fodder for any idea that wants to come along. Well, I don't want to get into all that. I've got this point up here. Now then, what I want to ask this question is, where did all these gods come from? Where?
Man's imagination.
Okay, how did that come to pass? Man's imagination. Man just made up his gods. Where did all... Well, let me ask you this question. Who knows what the most counterfeited piece of money is in the world? Unless they change it in the last 3 or 4 years, and they may change it next year if some things don't change. The American $100 bill. But for every one of those counterfeit $100 bills, where did they come from? From a copy or copying an original. So when we ask, where did all of these gods come from? They came from copying. There was an original. On all of the rest of these, just if you end up with a bunch of counterfeit $100 bills, I wondered about this in China. You go to a big bank and they'd open the drawer and there are a lot of $100 bills there. And they would add up the money on the calculator, but check it out, they would use their abacus. Okay, if the abacus said it, then that was okay. I went to this little hole in the wall place, at least it was legal because I needed to change money and it was legal here. And I just, small room, they opened this drawer, just $100 bills, fill that thing. I don't know if they were real, I don't know if they're counterfeit. Being in China, I wouldn't have doubted but what they were counterfeit. But the point is that if you end up with those, you have been deceived, you have something that is of no value. You might pawn it off on somebody else, but ultimately it has no value. So you've got an original God, and every other concept of God is just the distortion of the real God. And if you get that pawned off on you, you have something that is absolutely of no value. But to reinforce this idea, turn to Romans, the first chapter, please. Romans chapter 1. It talks about seeing the power of God in creation. And then it says in Romans 1:21, because that knowing God, they glorified him not as God. Then what happened? Neither gave thanks. This says the one time man did what in relationship to God? Man what?
Knew God.
How many men knew God? In Adam's time, did everybody know God? Or at least know who he was, what he was? Yeah. By the time you get to the flood, do you think those people all know who God was? By the time that was over and after, then they come out and they start, do you think they all, yeah, they all knew God. They knew who God was. They knew the, well, how in the world did you get the rest of these things like counterfeiting an American $100 bill? There was a time when all men knew God, but they didn't glorify him as God. They didn't give him thanks. They became senseless in their reasonings and, Just now, this says what I said just a moment ago when I said people today are whatever, choose your word. But this talks about man in those circumstances. Says they became foolish in their reasonings and their senseless heart was darkened, professing themselves to be wise. They became fools and changed the glory of the incorruptible God for the likeness of an image. So, got a God here, but I'm going out to sea. That's a little dangerous. So, okay. I've got a God of the sea. I've got a God of this. There's some power out here to understand. Instead of going to the one God that is the God of all, we begin to make gods in our image and give them powers that we attribute to them. Not powers that they have. They don't even exist. But men has made his own gods. And that's what Daniel is facing here. But there is this. And this is a quandary. We'll start with it next week. Here are the people of God. Here are the people of this idol or groups of idols. Who defeated whom? What, Laura?
The people of God won.
What are they doing in Babylonia if they won?
But they had sinned.
What?
Well, they had sinned. God sent them.
Okay, they had sinned. But how does that look to the Babylonian? Here is this people that served a God they call Yahweh, who is a God who is in what happens. He has to do with the affairs of men on earth. He changes times and he sets up different kings at different times. And yet we defeated them. We conquered them. We destroyed their temple. We destroy the temple of their God. What's their conclusion? Yeah? Our God's better than theirs. That's exactly right.
Well, that's,
what?
That's kind of like with the in the plagues in, or Moses, Aaron's rod. The magicians could take their rod and make snakes out of them, but Aaron's rod did the same thing,
In other words, give people an excuse to believe something they want to believe, and they'll believe what they want to believe. They'll eat their ice cream because they like the ice cream best. A joke.
Well, the thing to me that I came to me with this is that people, and you see it in athletes, superstition. In other words, they'll wear the same hat, for so many. And this is the thing that has made them great, this hat. In other words, they put it on and then they feel strong. that people start getting these superstitious feelings that this is what's done it. You know, this is what's done it for me. In other words, I got in the stock market and I found out how to manipulate it. Well, how many millions of people found that wrong? But for a long time, they can get caught up in it, and that superstition takes over, and they start to forget about God.
Yes. So we've got the conundrum here. Here is Daniel, whose faith is so strong in God, Paul.
So they might not realize this for another 70 years or so, but God raised Babylon to be a superpower and captured Israel.
Yes.
20 years ago, Babylon didn't even exist.
Right. Babylon didn't last that long in history, really. But and that's true. They are powerful. They defeated Jerusalem and destroyed the temple because God raised him up. And that's, Nebuchadnezzar is going to get some of that figured out. And we need to get that figured out. And that's really where we're going to be going about who is. Now, okay, I believe in God. He's real powerful. He sits up there. Thank you, God. Oh, God, can you do this for me? That's really kind of about as deep as people's concepts sometimes go of God. And when we get through, I want us to have the kind of concept that Daniel had, so that whatever the circumstances are in life, we will begin as we mean to go on. That whatever it is we're going to choose, what is right, we will bear whatever circumstances we have to bear. We will be faithful to God because He is God. He is who He is, God. He is Yahweh. He is in what happens. And what we're going to do beginning next Wednesday evening then is we're going to start in Genesis 1. So we're going to take about 10-15 minutes on this thing about who is God. In the beginning, well, Genesis 1:1, quote it for me please, quickly, somebody. In the beginning, God created the heavens and, not just the earth, the heavens and the earth. But we're going to expand that. And we're going to see who God. And then we're going to do this. We're going to say, and as I did in the sermon not long ago, suppose God did not really say that. Or suppose that the person who wrote that, God didn't give him that to write. Suppose all of that is just wrong. And if those statements aren't true, it is wrong. You can't put your faith in anything that book says. Now, this is just an interesting conundrum. And we'll close the class with this. Without what's in the Bible, tell me one thing you know about God. Do people think they know about God? The people you talk to who are just totally ignorant of Him, do they think they know about God? Yeah, they think they know about God. Why? How? How? A good question to ask is, when people get assertive like that, is how do you know? Okay, who is God? Next Wednesday evening. And we'll continue in Daniel.